Hi, everybody. Oh, wow. Okay. Another Monday. 1 o'clock, and it's time for Pirkei Avot, History and Hashkafa. Last time we spoke, we had started the second chapter of the tractate, which begins with a statement of Rabbi Judah the Prince, Rabbi Judah the Patriarch, who was the probably one of the best-known scions of the House of Hillel. He was—he is credited with redacting, organizing, editing the Mishnah, which is the first great bringing together and organizing of the oral law as it had accumulated over the course of millennia. And he was a remarkable person, and as part of his historical and biographical experience, is actually hinted at, I think, in the statement that we started to discuss. We will get to that, I think, towards the end of the half hour. Last week, I noted that the opening line that he has in this chapter, in this Mishnah, in this statement, is Rebbe Omer, Ezo hi aderech hayishara shiavor lo haadam, which is the straightest path that a person should choose for himself. I find it interesting that he mentions the straight path. Straight path, because that line actually echoes a work way out of our ken, as we talk about the Mishnah. The search for the straight path is actually the opening observation of a person whose 700th the anniversary of his birth, of his death rather. I'm sorry, for of his birth, we mark his death, sorry. we mark this past Saturday, and I'm referring to Dante Alighieri. Let me just share with you the opening line of, yes, you can be impressed with the fact that I have a copy of The Divine Comedy in Italian sitting over my desk, because Dante is one of my heroes. In fact, I will share with you the fact that, where are we here? That over my desk is this. It's a small bust of Dante, which is an indication of my admiration. And anyways, the Divine Comedy begins with these lines. Nel mezzo del cammin de nostra vita mi ritrovai per un selva oscura che la dritta via era smarrita. In the midst of the path of our journey, I found myself in a dark wood, and the reason was because the straight path was obscured, and the fact that he had gotten lost, Dante had veered off of the straight path, actually led him to the pilgrimage, which led him first into the depths of the Inferno, and then to the Purgatory, and ultimately to Paradise. So the fact that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is looking for the straight path is actually quite remarkable. What caused Dante to get lost, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is saying, don't get lost. Choose in advance. Choose the straight path, so you don't get lost. You have to be proactive in your life, and always keep your eye on the straight and narrow. So this is a theme which arises in world literature and world thought. The Divine Comedy, of course, is not just a piece of incredible literature; it's also a piece of incredible religious philosophical reflection. And I think the fact that Dante is being reactive, And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is being proactive, I think says a lot in terms of the way that we should live our lives. In any event, what does Rabbi Yehuda Nasi say? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says, "Ezo ederech hayishara shiavor lo haadam." What is the straight path that a person should choose for themselves? Kol shehi tiferet le something, but tiferet lo min haadam. And bring credit or power or honor to somebody, and also bring him credit among bring him or her credit among his or her peers. Now, I mentioned last week that in the manuscript edition of this Mishnah, there are two ways to spell the first word. In other words, Tiferet Le Aleph, Ayin Vav Sin, Hey. Everybody agrees that those word letters are there. There is a question as to whether there is a Yud before the last letter. And that Yud makes a very big difference. If we spell the word without a Yud, Kol Shehi Tiferet Le'osa, then the meaning of the verse is that you have to do credit to yourself. In other words, you should be, we might have talked about this last week, a person should be true to themselves. A person should be consistent. A person should do things that are a credit to themselves. Putting, as it were, putting your money where your mouth is. You know, don't be consistent. Choose a path which accords and affords with your ideals and with your stated values and goals. And also, that will, and in the end, lead to being a credit, or being accredited by, or being praised by, or being applauded by, or inspiring other people. That's one. That's one line of argument. If there is a yud there, however, then the word is no longer osa. The word is then oseha, meaning you do things which are not just a credit to yourself, but to He who made you, the person, one who made the path, meaning God. So, in other words, you have to do something which things which are going to redound positively to God, and we'll come to that. And it's not such an oblique reference to the concept of a person acting in a way which is a Kiddush Hashem, which sanctifies God's name. A position which actually has a lot of ramifications, not just in terms of practical application, but on a deeper level. But again, we'll get to that. We'll get to that as well. Let's start, however. Last week we spoke about the implications or the meaning of osa, doing things which redound to your credit, and people look at you and say, "Wow, that person really is consistent." Putting your money where your mouth is, as it were, and I'm sorry for saying it crudely, is something which is really, really important. Many people talk big, and they don't stick with their principles. They don't stick with their values. They don't stick with the things that they claim that they believe in. On the contrary, they'll sacrifice their values. They'll sacrifice their stated goals in the interest of other things, which don't. Line up so evenly or so appropriately with the things that you claim to believe in. I'm not going to go into details, but in the past week and a half, I've had actually the opportunity to address precisely that challenge in my own life. And it, you know, when you want to be consistent, it can be uncomfortable and it can make people unhappy with you, dafka. However, I think that there is no better feeling than being able to wake up in the morning and look yourself in the mirror and say, "I did what was right." That was one thing. It's interesting. My late mother used to always say, "The most important thing to do is to do the right thing, the right thing." And whether it's comfortable or not, people will respect you for it. Now, Rav Soloveitchik, in a different context, mentioned that people who sacrifice their values, sacrifice their integrity, sacrifice their own ideals in order to earn the affection of somebody else, very likely will not earn the love, will not gain the love of the people that they want or the person that they want to impress, but they will certainly lose their respect, because respect is something which is water, as they say, water in the desert. So that is one possible interpretation of the Mishnah based on the idea of Kol Shehi Tiferet Le'osa, that you make credit to yourself, your credit to your values, and that actually earns the respect even of those who will disagree with you. If you're consistent, then there can really be no you can go to sleep at night knowing that you've done what is right and what you believe is right. Then there's no way to even if you make a, even if you sacrifice for something for it, there's nothing that you, you know, you can go to sleep with a ruach cup, with a quiet, with your soul quiet, your mind quiet. It's interesting, that whole question of consistency and sticking to one's ideals is something that that is a theme of in rabbinic literature. There's a famous story about Alexander Yanai that Talmud tells. Alexander Yanai was the grandson of Simon the Hasmonean. In other words, he was the third king of Hasmonean or Maccabean king of Judea. He abandoned the Pharisees and became a Sadducee. He is not remembered fondly in the in Jewish history because he virulently and viciously persecuted Pharisees. He was against the popular party. He was very much sold out to the upper class, to which he actually belonged, but socially, but not not ideologically before that. In fact, the Talmud records that he actually really massacred many Pharisees, and that was taken to be something of something of an exaggeration, until relatively recently, when the Betzalel Art School decided to break ground for its new campus. Originally it was on Rehov Betzalel in Yerushalayim, and then it went moved to Mount Scopus, and now it's going to be part of the Russian compound in Jerusalem downtown, right next to the old jail, which is actually a museum. They got to a certain level, the tractors got to a certain level, and they found all kind of a mass grave, and they didn't know what to attribute to it until they checked the stratification, and the archaeologists determined that this huge, enormous mass grave was actually that of Jews who'd been massacred by Alexander Yanai because they didn't believe the way he believed, and he saw them as a threat, and therefore he murdered them. So you have here, unfortunately, tragic confirmation of what Jewish civil war can engender. The reason I mention the story is because Alexander Yanai, on his deathbed, we're going to have more than one deathbed story today, but on his deathbed is reputed to have told his wife, Shlomtzion Alexandra, who Alexander Yanai is known as one of the worst kings that we ever had, his wife, Shlomtzion Alexandra, was considered to be one of the best we ever had. He said to Shlomtzion Alexandra, don't worry or don't fear the Pharisees, and don't fear the Sadducees, because these are people each with their own integrity, and they're people of ideals, and each one will do the right thing according to themselves and not harm anyone. Okay. However, you have to be afraid of the hypocrites, of the tzvuim. Sha'osim ma'aseh zimri u'mevakshim sachar kibinchas. They're people who he invokes here the story about the blatant sexual immorality that was manifested by the head of the the head of the tribe of Simon in the desert, in order to really literally stick it to Moses and to indulge in orgiastic rites in front of Moses and Aaron and near the tabernacle, near the Mishkan. And out of outrage, Pinchas came and actually became something of a one-time vigilante, and killed both him and his paramour. The Torah has, or Jewish tradition has, sort of a mixed attitude towards Pinchas, but certainly at the time, an extreme action was called for, and he is praised, and God protects Pinchas in his response to his action. So what Yanai is saying, he says there are people who do the most nefarious things, but cloak them in piety. Those are the people you have to be careful of, the hypocrites. So you know, so that goes. So you see, Chazal were not the only. So it wasn't just Rabbi Judah the Prince who was concerned with this kind of inconsistency, but rather Chazal. It reflects a general trend among Chazal. Hypocrisy is a terrible cancer upon the body politic of a leadership class and certainly of an entire society. Anyways, so that's one way of looking at Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's statement. I would like to I think there's certainly more you could say about that, but let's move over to the other possibility. We do have to eventually make progress. Kol shehi tiferet le'oseha. You need to do things which are a credit, not just to yourself, living up to your own ideals, but also to God. I mentioned that this is fraught, or this statement is fraught, because it raises an aspect of Jewish morality and of Jewish, values that are not, an aspect which is not always appreciated or even endorsed in contemporary society. What does it mean? What does that mean that I have to do something which will be a credit to God? Credit to myself, I understand. Credit to God is a little bit harder to understand, because it assumes that I'm not allowed ever to do things which will, and this is all of the commentators who understand the Mishnah this way, I'm not allowed to do anything which will reflect badly, not just on myself, but things which will reflect badly on God or on the Torah. In other words, we are not allowed to do anything which will desecrate God's name, desecrate God's Torah, or cast ill repute on the Jewish people as a whole. All of that is cut together in the fabric, or in the context of what's called Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, which means that I'm not an independent actor. I'm not totally autonomous. Everything I do can redound to the credit or the discredit of somebody else, and if it redounds to the discredit of God or the Torah or the Jewish people, I'm not allowed to do it. But who are you to tell me not what to do? I'm not responsible for him. Why should I not do what I want to do just because it's going to harm somebody else? But that is precisely what Rabbi Yudin is saying. No Jew is an independent, totally independent actor. And I think it's most appropriate that Rabbi Yudin HaNasih was the one who said this for a very simple reason. However you understand the stories in the Talmud about Rabbi Yudin HaNasih and who it was with whom he had contact. The Talmud talks about, the Talmud likes to, and the Midrash like to say, like to tell that he had actually an intimate friendship with the then emperor of Rome, Antoninus Pius. But even if the invocation here of Antoninus is not him himself, but rather high level Roman officials, it's not important. What's important is the fact that Rabbi Yudin HaNasih was a person who had connections and was a welcome guest, an interlocutor with Roman high society. Which means that Rabbi Yudin HaNasih was always, even though it must have been enjoyable, I don't hobnob with the bigwigs, at least not like I used to, but it's a lot of fun, it's a lot of fun running with senators and representatives and Chavrei Knesset and whatever the case might be. It's very enjoyable, but it's also responsibility. Because every single Jew, certainly every religious Jew, represents all of Torah. And he was very much aware of that. And I think that that's a very big part of what's hiding behind, or what's if the reading is Oseha, is hiding behind his words. You always have to realize that you are always on. You're not your own person, and you have to recognize that everything you say and everything you do is going to impact directly on how others see not only you, but they will extrapolate on all other Jews, whether you want to or not. Whether you want to or not. There have been plenty of situations where one Jew sins and all the Jews suffer. That's just a reality. I mean, the example that I remember always hearing when I was a student was the fact that in 1290, the Jews were expelled from England for the simple reason that they were clipping coins, which was a horrible offense. I'm not going to go into the reason why, but coin clipping was considered a form of treason. Now, whether Jews did it or not, I could see Jews doing it, but that's served as certainly as a fig leaf for the expulsion of all the Jews. And it was a justifiable fig leaf, a justifiable excuse to expel the Jews. So we all represent the Torah to everybody else, and I think that's one of the motivating factors behind Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's statement. When you choose your life path, realize you're not in this alone. Strikingly, it cuts both ways, because the Jews are always on, as it were. And everybody's on in terms of some other community. In other words, religious people are always on in terms of each other. And they're always on in terms of the secular world, in terms of people don't really understand what a religious lifestyle and what a religious commitment means. And then Jews in general are on for the rest of the world. I mean, it goes on and on. So the question is, to what degree, not only do I have to check my own behavior and the way I express myself, but also to what degree should I or can I adapt myself so that I can have those bridges to other societies. It's not a bad thing. It's interesting, there is a prohibition in the Torah against actively adopting non-Jewish practices, non-Jewish cultural practices, probably out of desire to imitate. In other words, probably not just a question because it's good or it's bad or it's neutral, but because I want to look like everybody else. So it's very striking. It's a very highly nuanced prohibition. It's discussed extensively, and often when you look at how various rabbis throughout the ages act, ask themselves how much you can mimic and how much of outside society can you internalize, the answer is very much conditioned by the general attitude of your community towards the outside world. But let's leave that for a minute. I was wrote a very long article. Actually, one of the best articles I ever wrote, best academic articles I ever wrote, was on that topic. Anyways, one of the striking things is that Maimonides, when he discusses this, the parameters of this prohibition, what are the limits of acculturation and cultural appropriation isn't so bad, okay? To what degree can you appropriate from other or learn from other cultures? He says there's one exception, and that exception is if you are a person who has pathways in other societies, with upper society, non-Jewish society, whatever the case might be. There are many, many things you can do to adapt so you can actually maintain a contact with them, that you can maintain dialogue with them, that you can have a common cultural language with them. You can dress like them so you don't necessarily stick out, in order to be able to avoid judgmentalism on their part, and also to be able to achieve what you want to achieve by being a part of the broader society. Now, as I said, there's a tremendous spectrum as to how this works, and there'll be those who are much stricter and those who are less strict, but the idea is that when you raise the question of kol shehi teferet lo seha, how you act with other people, the question is how much you integrate with other people also arises, which is a whole other discussion, but I wanted to mention it in this context. One thing which is certainly true, is that part of Tiferet Lo Seha, but Tiferet Lo Min HaAdam, of doing justice and doing credit to God and doing credit to the Jewish people, or earning the admiration of other Jews and of non-Jews as well, is that requirement is not just a matter of, in Hebrew you'd say frazot, slogans, but rather requires that we develop a very, very serious sensitivity to how other people interpret that which we do. And that's where Kiddush Hashem comes in. Interestingly, Maimonides, when he discusses the question of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying God's kingdom, of sanctifying God's name, he spends most of his discussion on the question of martyrdom, which is way out of our path of discussion as right now. And then at the end, this is chapter 5 of the laws of the foundation, the fundamentals of the Torah, in the Mishnah Torah, Maimonides says as follows: there are other things that if you do them, can be considered to be desecration of God's name because they lead other people to say terrible things about God, terrible things about the Torah, terrible things about other Jews. And he gives a bunch of examples. Behushi aseo tam adam gadol b'torah mufursam b'chassidut. Dvarav shavriyot meraninim acharav b'shvilam. The example he's going to give are examples of behaviors which are ostensibly legitimate, but inappropriate, and he says here on the part of great scholars and people of great piety. But I think you can expand what he says to say as follows. If a certain type of expectation is going to be true of you, then each person, depending on their own level of identification as Jews or what the expectation is of that person, will in fact lead to the negative reaction, which you don't want to have. So, for example, he talks about, I haven't got time to go into all the details, but he mentions, for example, a famous statement in the Talmud that the Maimonides cites, where if a person comes in, say if a rabbi comes into a butcher store and he buys on credit, and the credit arrangement is, you know, well known to the owner of the butcher store and to the rabbi, that's not legitimate. Why isn't it legitimate? He's going to pay him because the people in the store think that he's getting freebies, that he's taking advantage of his status to get free food or free meat. What he should do is he should say, I'm putting it on credit, make it clear that he's taking advantage of an arrangement that everybody else uses, lest that lead to other people to suspect him of malfeasance, which then will lead to a general atmosphere of contempt for the Torah and the accusation exactly of that type of hypocrisy that I mentioned before. And that's true of every single Jew on every single level in their context. It requires that we really work as part of ourselves morally to see, not just to see ourselves as we see ourselves, but to see ourselves as others see us, and what will the ramification be for us as individuals and for us as Jews. As I think I mentioned last week, one of the great three distinguishing factors which differentiate Judaism from Western society, contemporary Western society, are those three things are that when we do not, as opposed to Western society says we own our bodies, we own our lives, and we own our reputations. You can do whatever you want. The Torah says the exact opposite. The Torah says that we don't own our bodies, we're not allowed to harm ourselves or affect ourselves in any way, if negatively, because we don't own our bodies, they're on loan. We don't own our lives. Suicide is not legitimate, and we don't own our reputations. And that's because the Torah says, "Be'itim nekiyim mi'Hashem mi'Yisrael." When you do something, you're not allowed to do anything which will lead to your being besmirching your own reputation in front of other people. A, because your own good name is one of the most important things you have, and B, for the simple reason I just mentioned, that if you do things which will besmirch yourself, you will be not only besmirching yourself, you will be besmirching God, the Torah, and the rest of the Jewish people as well. So that kol shehi teferet lo seva, teferet lo la'adam, min ha'adam, is not just because you want to do the right thing and be a credit to yourself and get your respect. You're not looking for honor, but because every single thing that a Jew does ultimately involves how the rest of the world sees everything that we represent. And this will be true, depending on the broader, you know, the wider the circle of people you're dealing with, this will be true of every single Jew, whether you're a Haredi, or whether you're a Dati, or whether you're traditional, or whether you're Chiloni, it doesn't really matter. So there's a lot to unpack in this opening statement by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. We started with the discussion of Dante Alighieri, that a person should be proactive in choosing the straight path and figuring out exactly the parameters thereof, that a person has to be true to themselves and be ready to stand up for their own integrity. Seeking other people's love may not work, but sacrificing one's ideals and one's values certainly will lose the respect of others, and says Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, you're not allowed to do that. And also the idea that we are not our own people all the time. We have plenty of free will, but at the same time, we work for God, God doesn't work for us, and we should be Teferet Laoseha, we should be a credit to our to God, as well as a credit to other people. Those two have to go together. I'll close with, I think, the most powerful, one of the most powerful Gemaras I have ever studied. When we say that you need to be a credit to other people and a credit to God, at the end of the day, the necessity of always having God before you comes in first. There is a scary, terribly scary story in the Talmud in Brachot, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great leader of the Jewish people who saved the Torah after in the time of the destruction of the temple and set up the system and the center at Yavne. His students, as he was about to die, say, please bless us. And he says, Yihi mora shamayim aleichem kemara basar v'dam. You should only be as afraid of God as you are of other men or other people, of what people will say. And the students said, that's it, nothing else. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, alavai, if only you would be able to internalize and apply that rule, because there are far too many people who will have no problem sinning in private, justifying it to themselves, always saying, no one will see me. Something to think about. We will see you next week, and we will go on in this Mishnah. Have a great week. It's hot as anything throughout the land of Israel, so stay inside, drink a lot of water. Tomorrow's supposed to get cooler, and if you go to the gym, make sure that the gym is air-conditioned, and we will see you next time.